Okay, hello. So really, I guess I should have put a question mark at the end of there, because really the entire little talk is basically questions. This is a question I've been thinking about for many years. I've done a little bit of work on it, and it's hard to do anything reasonable, at least for me so far. So that's why, despite the many years, not that much has actually been done. But I took this as an opportunity to force myself to sit down and try to articulate, you know, what I think the questions are that are interesting and what I have thought so far. And actually did find it kind of useful to do that. So I hope you find it at least interesting and maybe sparks you to think about it. And the things that I have looked at in this area were done with either myself or also with Brendan Foster, William Donnelly here, and Bianca and Philip in different occasions. Do I just push the enter button? No. This button? Well, I'll just use it. Yeah, okay. So the question is, from whence the vacuum? So more specifically, we have the expanding universe. Does the vacuum expand with the universe, or is it created as the universe expands? That's the question, basically. And just to put it into numbers and think about what I'm really saying, consider a cosmological scenario where the reheating temperature at the end of inflation, or this could also just be some early temperature, is 10 to the 15 GeV. Now, that lies at a redshift of 10 to the 28 today. So we have any wavelength today under 10 to the minus 5 centimeters, decreasing that by a factor of 10 to the 28, it would have become Planck length. So any wavelength today under 10 to the minus 5 centimeters would be trans-Planckian at that reheating time. Now, if we have inflation of, say, 60 E-foldings, that's another factor of 10 to the 26, which we can pile on to here. So then any wavelength under 10 to the 21 centimeters today, which is practically a cosmological length scale, would have been trans-Planckian at the onset of a 60 E-fold inflation. So the point is simply that almost all the degrees of freedom that we look at and interact with and are made of today originated at scales much below the Planck scale. And so were they there from the beginning and just got expanded, or were they created on the way, on the fly? So being there from the beginning is the deep reservoir scenario. Perhaps there is indeed a trans-Planckian reservoir. How could that be, physics-wise? So the simplest conceptual possibility seems to be asymptotically safe quantum gravity. We just heard about yesterday the scenario in which basically we have quantum field theory forever to the shortest scale, and an infinite number of modes. And that looks like a pretty straightforward way to have an infinitely deep reservoir that could just allow the vacuum to expand into expand rather than coming into existence. But as a side remark, I would like to point out that there's a kind of scary consequence of having this infinitely deep reservoir, which is it seems to create a big problem for black hole entropy. Namely, if black hole entropy is related to entanglement entropy, then we have too much entanglement because we have modes way beyond the Planck scale. That's not necessarily a problem, provided that the geometrical, so we decompose black hole entropy into entanglement up to some scale or above some scale, and then the geometric terms in the effective action below that scale. So if we run it up in asymptotically safe quantum gravity, maybe the we saw that the Newton constant is still positive at the fixed point. So we can't cancel an overly abundant entanglement entropy by a negative Bekenstein-Hawking entropy. So the negative contribution must come from R squared or other terms. I think this really is a problem with understanding black hole thermodynamics and asymptotically safe quantum gravity, but it would be interesting to actually look at the renormalization of this term and see if, you know, already maybe at that scale it could take care of this problem. So I think that's an interesting question. It's completely aside. Probably it's the, I could have focused the whole talk on that. Another possibility you might think is string theory. So string theory is supposed to be a complete theory. It doesn't have really like supposedly physical degrees of freedom below the string scale that are localizable. So then where did the vacuum come from in a string theory cosmology? I looked at what are string theory cosmologies. They tend to be looking at a background geometry that's sourced by some effective field theory that's supposed to come from string theory, but they don't really address this question. So actually, I don't see in any way that string theory provides an answer to the deep reservoir question today. That's another side remark. So another possibility is instead there's no deep reservoir, but modes are created. The simplest picture of that we could have is a free field on a circle of length A of t. It's an expanding circle. That's the cosmic scale factor. So then the wave numbers that are allowed are 2 pi n over A, where n is an integer. And n is bounded by some maximum, so that because we want to have a cutoff on the maximum proper wave number, that is the minimum physical wavelength. And so it's k max A of t over 2 pi. As the scale factor grows, more and more modes come into existence. And so when A of t grows enough to admit one more integer in this range, we have to create that corresponding mode. Basically, it should appear, it's a quantum degree of freedom of the field. The field is somehow a bunch of harmonic oscillators, so it should be put in its ground state. And if it's a free field, it's very, very straightforward to do that because we can identify the adiabatic ground state of that mode and just slip it in the ground state, and nobody will know the difference. It could have been there forever, or it just was created at that time. If we want to make a fancier model, which might be a good idea, for instance, on a three sphere instead of a circle, we could use a cutoff on the eigenvalues of the Laplacian on the three sphere instead of a cutoff on the maximum linear wave number. So that is straightforward, but it sort of dodges a problem, which is that we don't really have free fields, we have interactions. So if the field is asymptotically free, so for a moment, forget about gravity. I'll bring gravity into it in a second. So as a field theory, if it's an asymptotic...
You don't worry about your entirety, right?
I do worry about it very much.
But, I mean, you said there is no problem, but even for a free field, what you're doing is just keep adding new dimensions.
Yeah, I'm just sort of bringing in... You can picture it as the other pieces of the Hilbert space are being invited in. Previous to then, they were just somewhere else. Well, it's, yeah, but it's mode creation in the sense that I wouldn't find any degrees of freedom above that wave number before that time. Or at any time. I'll come to zero point energy in a moment. Yeah, I said I'm leaving gravity out for a moment. But. Yeah, that's probably a way to talk about it also. What problem? Let's discuss this after I finish. Let me keep going through the flow of the talk here. So if the field is asymptotically free, then when this new mode is born, it's non-interacting with the other modes that exist at that time. And therefore, if it's got a momentum at the cutoff scale, so maybe they can be born in the adiabatic vacuum. Then as the universe expands, they redshift, they come into interaction with the rest of the modes. And depending on the relation between the mode cutoff, the interaction scale cutoff, like the QCD scale or something, and the expansion rate, perhaps the unexcited vacuum can emerge from this creation process, even though the field theory is interacting. And I'm sort of inserting the new degrees of freedom in their free vacuum state, not as part of the overall interacting vacuum. Let's see. So, So some work that I did with William on this was to consider a scenario where we actually have a mode coupling that's zero at the cutoff scale, but as you go below the cutoff scale, it turns on. However, I'm specifying this rule in a preferred reference frame. I'm referring to three momentum in the cosmological frame. That means that loop effects in the quantum field theory will induce Lorentz violating terms in the effective action that will depend on the preferred frame. That is, it will induce an hypersurface orthogonal Einstein ether or chronometric effective action with calculable coefficients. But of course, it all depends on the numbers that you put in here. Maybe a more interesting scenario, which I just thought about recently, is if you don't put in by hand a Lorentz violating cutoff of interaction of modes, but you just start with an asymptotically free Lorentz invariant field theory, but you have a Lorentz violating cutoff of the spectrum of modes in the vacuum. So it'd be interesting to elaborate that. If the field is not asymptotically free, and in fact, if we turn on gravity, then basically that means in any case, something else is needed to account for vacuum emergence. So let's think about zero point energy. So we should have worried, as you just mentioned a second ago, not only is the question, what about the interaction energy of the new modes with the old, but what about the zero point energy of the new modes? So that zero point energy at redshifts, maybe I could have subtracted it initially, but then it's redshifting. Now, normally, the effective action is regularized by local counterterms, and that in a standard quantum field theory in curved space, which ensures general covariance and a consistent semi-classical Einstein equation. Is that story compatible with having modes born in the way that I'm proposing? I have no idea. It looks troublesome, but it would have to be somehow compatible for this to be possible. So I say it seems likely the answer is no. Right. So I think that if you just take gravity as a background and put the field theory in, the answer would be no. But if the mode is born gravitating, the answer is possibly yes. And this is, I think, the key point of the whole idea at this point in my mind. The mode has to be born not into its free vacuum, but into a quantum state that satisfies the gravitational Hamiltonian constraint equation, or the Wheeler-DeWitt equation. That equation ensures two things that were troublesome here. One is general covariance, because it is the expression of part of general covariance, and it ensures zero energy, in a sense, for the full state, so there can be no problem with energy injection if the injection process is at zero energy exactly. And then I just wanted to say that after thinking about this, I finally realized what Robert Brout was thinking when he wrote about this in several papers, some of which were written while he was spending time here towards the end of his life. He thought a lot about the inflaton, where it comes from, and mode creation, and he basically suggested something like this, if I understand him right. 2 minutes? Okay. So this is the Wheeler-DeWitt can of worms. And once you mention Wheeler-DeWitt, you're in trouble. What are the worms? Can we even make the equation well-defined? What does the wave function mean in terms of quantum mechanics? Does it give probabilities for what? I don't know. But I don't think anymore, like I used to, that those are reasons not to think about it. I'm convinced that answering those questions is an essential part of understanding quantum gravity. And it's going to require modification of quantum mechanics, maybe as Philip just mentioned. Let's see. So since I only have 0 minutes, basically, I was going to say that one way of getting a formally specifying a solution to the Wheeler-DeWitt equation is by the Hartle-Hawking no-boundary wave function, where you integrate functionally over manifolds with only one boundary, four geometries with fixed three geometry and fields on the boundary. This is not well defined. We might try regularization with a spectral cutoff on the fields or a discrete regularization like Regi, CDT, spin foam, tensor network, or something. And this is a beautiful idea because then the law, the integral itself, is both the law of physics, the only law you need, and it's the initial conditions. It's everything. It's a very compelling idea for fundamental physics. Let's imagine then that it makes sense somehow in one of these regularization schemes. Then vacuogenesis appears natural. So boundaries, maybe this is related to what you were just saying, Lee, boundaries with greater volume would have modes, more modes in a regulated version of this, just because the boundary had greater volume, because the volume would come in discrete bits. If the regulator preserves enough symmetry so that the Wheeler-DeWitt equation is satisfied, in other words, and still imposes general covariance and zero energy, then it seems that even in a non-asymptotically free interacting theory of matter and gravity, we could generate the appropriate local vacuum. And this is actually what I think my current best guess about what vacuogenesis is, and it's the only way to understand it. But then I should just mention that as a toy model, I've been looking with, I looked with Brendan before and now with Philip and Bianca at free field theory on a growing lattice to try to get a handle on some of these ideas, but I've run out of time, so I'll just leave that there and stop.